Inside the country of 1.2 billion people, a secret genocide is happening each year. Despite coming into the notice of Indian government, killing of nearly 600,000 female fetuses continue unabated. In this edition of In Focus, we'll try to find out why the custom of gender bias continues in India and why has the country failed to protect its female population, be it inside the womb or outside. While India's legal institution insists on equal rights for genders, in reality the country is witnessing large-scale prejudice against girl child and violation of women's reproductive rights. The issue became evident as the country came up with its census, a population survey done every 10 years. The census 2011 showed alarming figures, which is a matter of concern for the nation. The number of girls under the age 7 per 1,000 boys has gone down from 960 in 1998 to 914 in 2011 nationwide. The worst part is that the trend in urban areas is worse, with 902 child sex ratio compared to 919 in the rural regions. Analysts fear 8 million female fetuses have been killed over the past one decade.
When the 2001 actually decline started from 1991 census. Then when there was a decline in 1991 census, there were some activists and people who felt that there is some reason going on which is leading to this declining of the child sex ratio. It is not alone infanticide who cannot contribute this much of decline. Then it was through research and analysis found that if you really see, the ultrasound machines came to India in early 90s. And when there was introduction of ultrasound machine, then in 1991 we saw a gradual decrease in the declining child sex ratio. So these activists felt that if this is not being addressed now, 2001 would have a very bad picture.
Campaigners say the decline is largely due to the increased availability of antenatal sex screening, and they talk of genocide.
India is a patriarchal society, and we live in patriarchal families where the son is preferred to daughters. Therefore, with a small family norm, everybody would like to have two sons. And so the introduction of the ultrasound technology has grown to such an extent, the misuse of that technology is leading to declining child sex ratio, particularly 0 to 6 years at birth. In the last 20 years, there's been a huge drop in birth of girls.
Although laws are in place, the implementation of justice is time-consuming and weak.
Our constitution guarantees us equal rights. India is a member of CEDAW, the Convention for Elimination of Discrimination Against Women, has ratified. So that should give us equality and equity. But in reality, it is not so, as we all know. At the moment, there is a law called the Preconception Prenatal Determination Act, which has not been implemented, which has failed, because the way the law has been structured and put in the hands of appropriate authorities, the law sets doctors to catch doctors. So, and when you speak to doctors about misuse of technology, they will say that it's not the professionals, medical professionals who are doing it, it's, you know, other people who, because it's so widely available at a very reasonable cost, and it's a huge industry. Mm-hmm. You earn a lot of money, and they advertise that if you, you know, do ultrasound now and abort your daughter now, you won't have to pay a dowry. So later. So it's a great incentive for people not to have daughters.
In the process of exploring the deep-rooted problem of gender bias in India, In Focus came across Dr. Meethu Khurana, who has suffered worst after she denied the killing of her female fetuses. In February 2005, Meethu discovered she was pregnant with twins. Immediately, her in-laws asked her to undergo prenatal test to check whether they are baby boys or girls.
I got married in November 2004, and it was in February that I came to know that I'm pregnant in 2005, and in 2006 I was told that I'm carrying twins. So when it was told, I was told that I'm carrying twins. Then my mother-in-law started demanding a sex determination test. They didn't want two daughters. I mean, if they are twins, at least either it has to be a son and a daughter, but not two daughters. And for me, this was a cultural shock. So I refused it. So when I refused it, I mean, there was torture to get it done. I still did not bow down. So then they played this trick. They gave me a cake with egg, saying it's eggless. And when I ate it, I'm allergic to egg. I developed the allergic manifestations. I was taken to this hospital. In the 16th week of pregnancy, I was admitted to the labor room without my consent. Then just taking a note of a history of acute kidney infections around 5 to 6 years before my pregnancy, the doctor ordered a scan of my kidney, ureter, bladder. This had nothing to do with the allergy for which I was admitted. And when I was taken to the ultrasound room, I was sedated and the doctor did the full fetal ultrasound. So from that day onwards, the emphasis had shifted from sex determination to abortion. My husband wanted an abortion now, either of one or both the girls. 5 or 6% of the women.
Meethu Khurana was one woman who fought back. When she refused to submit to the testing to determine the gender of her babies, her family brought down such pressure upon her that it almost amounted to torture. They denied her food and water in their attempt to break down her will. Today, Meethu continues her fight in the Indian Court of Justice, but up till now, she's got nothing from the legal system, nor has she been able to put a stop to this ongoing rampant menace.
Started as a struggle to save them. Now it is a struggle against the system. I mean, it started as a struggle against my husband and in-laws, and it has become a struggle against the whole system, which doesn't want daughters. As I said, when I struggle started, it was just against one particular family. And I had been brought up in such a sheltered environment that for me, I never thought that this is such a widespread mindset. It was only when I filed the complaints and when all the authorities started looking me as a criminal rather than the other party, they started telling me that, you know, it's every wife's duty to give her husband a son, and I was taken as a criminal for, dragging my in-laws to court for this. And I mean, then I realized that it's too bad. Then I started doing my research and I came to know that there's hardly any legal actions against people who are doing this. No court cases are filed. It was the authorities who are supposed to take action against these people who told me to go and give my husband a son. And I mean, even till date, I'm being pressurized day in and day out to do a compromise. I'm being threatened. I had to leave a job. It's pressures from all sorts of people whom you would otherwise expect to help me.
Living with her parents in the Indian capital, New Delhi, she's bringing up her twin daughters. Meethu is skeptic about the future of Indian women, including her daughters. Meethu denied showing her daughters directly to the camera crew of InFocus team, saying they will have psychological trauma if they appear on TV and they will ask questions which she will not be able to answer.
7,000 female feticides happen every day in India, and there are not even 7,000 court cases pending against them, against the doctors all over the country. Not even 70 women have come forward, and I don't believe it. I don't believe it that the act was passed in 1994 and till date, I was the first woman to come out in 2008. The only reason by which this can happen is that whenever a woman tries to come out, she is pushed back.
Meethu was the first woman in India who took a stand and spoke up against this crime. But there are millions of Meethus in almost every Indian homes who undergo the same suffering and succumb to the pressures from their in-laws. The plight of women is common and repeated in millions of homes across India and getting worse.
There are many reasons for this. I mean, some of them are social ills like dowry, because of which a woman is considered as a girl child, a daughter is considered as a burden. When you marry her off, you have to give the money, a dowry. And if you have a son, you can expect it. And it's seen as a neighboring, watering a neighbor's plant. You educate a girl, you feed her, you bring her up, and then finally she goes to her in-laws and she cannot even support you in her old age. Continuing of this is more of a reason because the entire system believes in this and there is hardly any implementation or hardly any convictions for doing this. So there is no fear of law also. If there was some fear of law, people would again think beyond their mindsets. But as there is no fear of law, nobody gets punished. So they'll have to continue with whatever they think so.
Although it is illegal to discover the sex of the baby with the intent of aborting, the practice remains rampant in India. It is estimated that nearly 50,000 girls are aborted every month. It is difficult to know how many baby girls are also abandoned or murdered after they are born. As a result, Indian men now outnumber women. The 7-year-old mini sells balloons outside the Jaipur Museum and earns 100 rupees, which is equivalent to $2 a day. Mini stands barefoot for about 11 hours a day on the street, waiting for customers to buy balloons. When I inquired about her parents, she had no answer. Shying away from the camera, what only she could tell me was, she's living with many brothers and sisters on a sidewalk. She doesn't know who her parents are and where she belongs. And in India, we found girls like Minnie at each and every traffic signal, and there seems to be no inspection and regulation about where they came from. The question to be asked is, why would a nation do such a thing to itself? The answer is money. Indian nation demands that the parents of a daughter pay a huge dowry to get her married. Many families feel they cannot pay the steep price. Therefore, they abort their girl babies in the hope of a son.
For the phenomena of gender bias, sex selection and masculinization of sex ratios in a country, generally there are three reasons that are put forward that have to all exist in order for this phenomena to take place. First of all is a culture of son preference. Second of all is a rapid decline in fertility. And third, misuse of medical technologies. So when all three are present, then one may expect to see such a phenomena. If there is no gender bias in a society, there's no son preference in a society, no matter what technology you have, it's not going to be misused against women. If you don't have the technology and you have the bias, even then you may not see this phenomena. But when all these three things come together, the son preference, the misuse of technology, and the rapidly falling family size, when these come together, you may see the phenomena.
The government has admitted that it has failed to address this problem and described it as a national shame. But to date, government has shown little determination to stop the practice. Experts say until 1970, India's sex ratio was reasonable, until India's premier medical institute, All India Institute of Medical Science, came out with a study which said sex determination test is profitable for the woman in India. The study promoted the idea that women should no longer require to have endless children to have a son, thus encouraging determination and elimination of female fetuses as an effective tool of population control.
Indians never wanted a population control program. We were not interested. Nobody, no Indian thinker till the 50s has ever mentioned population as a problem, including Gandhi, including Nehru, okay, or any other thinkers. This ideology came from the West. It is the Western population NGOs like IPPF, International Planned Parenthood Federations, and Rockefeller and Ford Foundations, who thought that in the Malthusian concept that we were growing too much for their size, and that which they perceived as threat to the Western world. And that is why they decided that population should be controlled. Now, population control, of course, population is a problem and we must do something about it. But what they thought, what their concept was population control at any cost. Mm-hmm. And if that cost happens to be letting 20%, 30% girls die, so be it. That was their concept. So when they came in India, their initial research showed in 50s and 60s that abortion was not an option for Indian women. All major religions in India ban abortions of all sorts, and it was socially, culturally not acceptable for women to undergo abortion. So what they did instead was that in their own research they found that most people, almost all women, want boys, and not one, they actually want at least two boys. That means before sterilization could be done, they had 4, 5, 6 children. So they thought that if boys is all they need, why produce girls? So they did research, found out ways of finding out whether it's a boy or a girl before birth, first by amniocentesis, then by ultrasound, and that selectively killing girls. And in their larger perspective, they're very happy that the system has worked and population growth is going down.
However, to curb the sex selective abortions in 1994, the government came up with a law, the prenatal determination test, or PNDT. Later in 2004, it was amended to include gender selection even at the preconception stage.
I think we have a lot of laws in place in India. We have a law against determining the sex of the child. We have laws against gender violence. We have laws against dowry. We have laws against trafficking. We have laws against discrimination. We have laws which say girls must be educated just as well as boys are. So we have the framework is definitely in place. The problem is implementation of the laws. So if a woman goes to court and seeks redress for violence or unequal distribution of property, what is the pace at which she gets justice? Does she always get justice? How many women have the wherewithal to come forward and go to court in the first place? And there's so many barriers, and the barriers are not just financial or educational. There are also many inherent self-imposed restrictions that women adopt. So, you know, we can always do with an improvement in the law, and we can certainly do with improvement in the implementation of the laws. But fundamentally, it is about how people themselves see women, and how women themselves and how men see women, and are we really on the same stage, or are we up and down?
At present, there are 40 to 50,000 registered ultrasound clinics in India, and thousands more are without records. India's capital, New Delhi, has the worst child sex ratio, which is 836 girls under 7 for every 1,000 boys, and is considered as the most unsafe city in India for women. Experts blame the medical fraternity and the law enforcing agencies for the ongoing genocide.
It is the nation planners, thinkers who have to think about it. Most importantly, the medical profession. Now, it is not that women were desperate to kill all girls and produce all boys. The female feticide was invented by medical profession and now being shamelessly sold and profited from the genocide. It's the medical profession is directly responsible. There is no auto-regulation. The medical council is a completely impotent body. They have never find any doctor for medical incompetence or malpractice. They have never debarred any doctor from practice. So nobody really cares. Right now it's a very high profit, low risk activity for the doctors. You make a lot of money and there's almost no risk of being caught. And that is how it's getting it. So medical profession is getting away with it. Thinkers and planners are being bought or browbeaten into believing that it's good for the nation. And most importantly, there is no outrage. I mean, one girl gets killed in a bar or something, all middle class goes with a candlelight to India Gate, you know. But almost a million girls, more than a million girls being killed in a year, and nobody really cares. All of us, even people who do female feticide or perform it, say that it is bad, but nobody really thinks it is murder.
Despite these horrific numbers, fetal sex determination and sex selective abortion by unethical medical professionals has today grown into a millions of dollar industry. Already deep-rooted social discrimination against women has been spurred on by technological developments. Today, mobile sex selection clinics drive into almost any village or neighborhood unchecked.
I would not point at one person or one area. Certainly, the government has not taken strong steps to regulate the technology which is being misused. The government has not ensured that the culprits are booked and punished. You know, the judiciary has failed to do that. At the same time, if you speak to those who are providing the service, they will say, we are only, you know, giving it to those who ask for it. We are not forcing people to use this technology. So we have to address the supply side as well as the demand side. Mm-hmm. And changing people's mindset is, I think, what we are all about, you know, valuing the girl child.
Since 1991, 80% of districts in India have recorded a declining sex ratio, with the state of Punjab being the worst. States like Maharashtra, Gujarat, Punjab, Himachal Pradesh and Haryana have recorded more than 50-point decline in child sex ratio in this period. While the boys from Haryana may have found a temporary solution to the problem by buying brides from other states of the country, experts warn that the demographic crisis will lead to the growth of sexual violence and abuse against women and female children, trafficking, child marriages, maternal deaths due to abortions, early marriage and practice like polyandry.
See, implications are very much visible. See, because of lack of VC, there are men who are not they are on eligible marriageable age, they are not getting brides from their same community, same caste. Often there is bride buying is happening. We often see when we go to Haryana or even when we go to Jharkhand or even when we go to Rajasthan, we see these girls are being brought from other states. Earlier, it was more girls were being transported, like they were trafficked from Jharkhand, Chhattisgarh and all. But nowadays, Jharkhand is also having minimum girls. So we see girls from other states, obviously. Then there is a polygamy also happening. Because when in UP, when we go and we find there are families where there are 3-4 brothers sharing the same wife, because there's no choice. So this is obviously one. On the other hand, obviously, again, domestic violence, then the entire violence against women is increasing. And I think the type of cases we are having or we read in the newspaper every day, I think there is an incident happening, and this is all leading to all because the sex ratio, it is not because as a child sex ratio has gone down, even our sex ratio is going down comparatively. Like if we really see, we may say okay, the sex ratio is okay, but overall if we do a long time analysis, the general sex ratio has also gone down.
Recently, the government has initiated an incentive plan to encourage families to have girls by providing them with cash rewards. On the birth of a girl child, 5,000 rupees, which is equivalent to $114, will be deposited into a bank account under her name, according to local media reports. Once the family ensures the girl completes her schooling and does not marry before the age of 18, she will have access to the money. The finance department has not yet approved the program, which would initially be for families living below the poverty line. However, social activists are not much optimistic about the effectiveness of such cash incentives. They believe the families that need to be targeted are not the poor, but rather the middle class and the affluent. The Thomas Reuters Foundation survey says India is the fourth most dangerous place for women to live in. Women belonging to any caste, colour or creed and religion can be the victim of violence in this country. The question that remains, whether the country will be able to protect the minimal rights for almost half of its citizens.